Through the windows of the Fiat, she could see Alia and Nim already dozing. She hated to wake them. "Sorry," she whispered as she slipped inside and used two knotted socks to bind Nim's hands together. "It's okay," said Nim sleepily. "My mom duct-taped oven mitts on my hands when I had the chicken pox." Diana wasn't sure what cooking and infectious diseases had to do with anything, but she made a polite humming noise. She shifted in the passenger seat, trying to find a comfortable position, listening to the quiet of the night. She wanted to sleep, but the car was miserably cramped, and her mind didn't want to shut down. A run might help. She slipped outside as silently as she could. Someone was snoring loudly from the other side of the clearing, and based on the timbre, she suspected it was Theo. Diana stretched, then walked back to the outcropping to listen to the rush of the waterfall and see if she could find another trail. She was surprised to see Jason standing there, gazing out at the water. He'd shed his shirt again, possibly to bind Theo's hands, and the mist from the falls had beaded on his skin. As if sensing her presence, he turned sharply. "Sorry," she said. "I wasn't spying. I couldn't sleep." Well, maybe she'd been spying a little. She liked looking at him. But hadn't Nim said that most girls did?
"Me neither," he said. "Theo snores."
"So I heard." Jason looked back out at the falls.
"What if it doesn't work?"
he said quietly. Diana didn't ask what he meant. The oracle didn't lie.
Then maybe she made a mistake. Oracles have been wrong before.
Not this one. He leaned against the rock by the bell and crossed his arms.
"Would you have played the game if we'd kept going?"
"With the lasso? I don't know. Would you have?"
He expelled a short breath. "Absolutely not."
Diana perched beside him on the rock. "I meant what I said. I'm sorry for using the lasso on you." Jason shrugged, the muscles shifting smoothly beneath his skin.
"What I am, what I can do. I've kept it secret a long time. Keeping people out gets to be a habit."
"I shouldn't have forced my way in. Truth means something different when it's given freely." He tilted his head back, watching the stars.
"Early on, my parents saw that I was stronger than the other kids, faster, and I liked to fight. I was on the way to becoming a bully. They taught me to hold back, to be careful not to hurt anyone. But sometimes I feel it in my blood, the desire to use this strength to prove myself."
Diana tried not to show her surprise. This was exactly the behavior she'd been told to expect in the world of man. And yet, Jason recognized the urge to violence that had been passed down to him through the Corrales line. He'd struggled to temper it. "Is that why you value control so highly?"
"It's that, but it's also the way I was raised. My mom taught Alia and me that our money could only protect us so much. People would be waiting for us to fail, to prove we didn't deserve what we had."
"I know that feeling,"
she admitted.
He cast her a skeptical glance.
"Do you? It's a trap for us. Alia and I always have to be better. We always have to be a step ahead. But the stronger you get, the more you achieve, the more people want to make sure you know your place."
He bumped the back of his head gently against the rock.
"It's exhausting. And all that caution doesn't leave much room for greatness."
Maybe she understood less than she thought. On the island, Diana had always known her failures meant more, but she'd also known her achievements would be her own, that if she ran quickly enough, fought hard enough, thought fast enough, her sisters would treat her victories with respect. She nudged her arm against his. "It wasn't stupid, what you said on the plane. We all want a taste of greatness." Jason turned his head to look at her.
"What if you want more than a taste?"
Something in those words made her pulse quicken. "How much more?"
"I don't know."
His gaze shifted back to the sky.
"You take a bite, you take another. How are you supposed to know when you'll be full?"
"I see you, daughter of Earth. I see your dreams of glory. Then your desire to run Corrales Labs, your parents' legacy,
their legacy. he repeated, and released a bitter laugh. Do you know some part of me wants to believe Alia's power caused the car accident that killed our parents? Diana drew in a sharp breath, and he glanced at her, dark eyes glinting.
How's that for truth? He said. It's why I pushed Michael so hard on the investigation. I wanted there to be a conspiracy, an explanation, a reason for all of it. If wanting to do great deeds isn't stupid, that is. It's the way little kids think.
What would it do to someone to lose so much in a single night? Who wouldn't search for order, for some measure of control?
You wanted to find meaning in their deaths, she said. There's nothing wrong with that.
Jason pushed off the rock and prowled to the edge of the cliff. I wanted to remake the world, make it into something I understood. He crossed his arms, profile turned to the sky, and she remembered seeing him alone in the orchard, a stone sentinel, keeping the watch.
I still do.
That's why you want to retain control of the company.
He cocked his head to one side and slowly made his way back to the rock. Why do I feel like I'm always the one who ends up talking instead of you?
I'm an excellent listener, she ventured.
He snorted. I'll make you a deal. We'll play 20 questions. You answer, and I'll forgive you for the lasso.
She cut a hand through the air.
20 is way too many.
10.
3.
3?
He said incredulously. That's nothing.
She thought she knew what he would ask, and she felt ready to tell him the truth about who and what she was, maybe not all of it, but some. She'd taken that much from him by force. She could give it back.
Diana shrugged. In the stories, it's always 3. 3 wishes, 3 questions.
He sighed and settled next to her on the rock again.
Fine, but you have to tell the truth.
As much as I can.
He rubbed his hands together in anticipation. Okay, Diana Prince, do you have a boyfriend back home?
She laughed. That wasn't what she'd expected at all.
No.
A girlfriend?
No.
You realize you're terrible at this, right? That was 2 questions.
But rules are rules. 1 more question, Jason Corrales.
She waited. She knew what he would ask next.
Fine, he said.
What's the story of the double star?
She sat up straighter, surprised. No questions about her home, her people?
You remember that?
Yes, and I knew you didn't want to tell me about it.
She scowled. Am I that easy to read?
Maybe I'm just an excellent listener.
Go on. Story. Diana leaned back against the rock, listening to the wind in the pines. This was a different kind of secret to share. She'd already admitted the story was her favorite. She didn't want to look foolish.
She studied the night sky.
Do you know how to find Ursa Major?
The Big Dipper? Said Jason.
Sure. She pointed, tracing a path. If you follow the handle, you'll see Arcturus there beside it. And if you keep going, you'll see the star known as the Horn, or Osimek. It's one of the brightest in the sky.
Can't miss it.
But it has a secret.
He clucked his tongue. Never a good idea.
Never, she agreed. It's really 2 stars, orbiting the same center of gravity, so close they're indistinguishable. The story is that there was a great warrior, Zoraida, who swore she would never give herself to anyone but her equal, but none could best her in battle.
I'm guessing this is where the hero enters?
Zoraida is the hero, but another champion did come to try to win her. A man just as prideful and just as strong. He swore he would defeat her or die in the endeavor, and so on a rosy dawn they met and clashed, Zoraida with her trusted axe in hand, and Agathon with a sword that gleamed bright as morning. Diana closed her eyes, remembering the words of the story. From the start, it was clear they were evenly matched, and the valley echoed with the sounds of the blows they rained down on each other. On and on they fought for hours and then days. And when Zoraida's axe shattered on Agathon's gauntlet, and Agathon's sword broke against Zoraida's shield, still they battled, neither willing to cede victory.
Who won? Said Jason.
Diana opened her eyes.
Neither,
Or both, depending on how you look at it. As they fought, their respect for each other grew. They fell in love, but as they were matched in strength, so were they matched in stubbornness. They died in each other's arms, and with their last breaths, spoke their vows. The gods placed them in the sky where they might remain forever, neither diminished by the other's brightness, ruling their corner of the night in haughty isolation.
That's your favorite story?
Jason's brows were raised in the bemused expression she was coming to expect from him. Yes, she said defensively.
That is some grim stuff. You a Romeo and Juliet fan too?
Diana scoffed. Hardly. I prefer Benedict and Beatrice.
But they weren't doomed.
Doomed isn't a necessity.
Just a nice perk?
Diana threw up her hands. It's a tragic love story.
I mean, it's definitely tragic.
It's romantic. They found their equals. From the first time Diana had heard Zoraida's story, she'd been fascinated by it. It had seemed filled with all of the danger and enticement of the world of man. What would it mean to want someone so much but hold to your beliefs in spite of it? If she'd lost her heart to Agathon, would she have given in or kept to her vow? Maybe the story was a little melodramatic, but that didn't mean she had to stop loving it. She turned to find Jason watching her again. "Why didn't you ask me about the island?" she said. "Where I'm from." He smiled, and his dimple made a shadow in his cheek.
Truth means something different when it's given freely.
He bobbed his head toward the valley.
How far away do you think that mountain peak is?
Diana grinned. Let's find out. With a laugh, they were plunging down the hill, past the pond, through the silver wood. Diana shot past him, leaping over a fallen log, under a low branch, her heart pounding a happy rhythm as the forest unfolded before her. She burst from its trees onto a gravelly hillside, sliding more than running, as the powdery soil gave way beneath her feet in a shower of pebbles. She heard Jason whoop somewhere behind her, struggling to keep up, but apparently enjoying every minute of it. They were on open ground now, low rolling hills pocked with boulders and scrub clinging to rough plains of granite. She heard Jason's steady footsteps, and then he was running beside her, matching her step for step. He's not hiding anymore, she realized. She laughed, and his smile flashed white in the darkness. Diana let go and ran. You do not enter a race to lose. She felt the slap of her sandals against the earth, the stars whirling above her. She didn't bother to pace herself or to worry about how far or how high the mountain might be. She simply ran, Jason's steps pushing her faster, the hound at the heels of the stag, but she felt no fear, only exhilaration. She didn't need to worry about what it might mean to lose, or how she should comport herself as a princess. There was only the race, the desire to win, the thrill of her wild heartbeat matched to his as they leapt the rocky gully of a stream and began to climb the peak's steep slope, pushing through thorny scrub and fragrant pine until... There, an old cart track, barely visible, overgrown with weeds and broken by tree roots. Diana hooted in triumph as her feet met the path, sprinting higher to where the trees were sparse, their trunks bent and twisted by the wind. They looked like women, frozen in a mad dance, the tangle of their hair tossed forward in abandon, their backs arched in ecstasy or bent in supplication, a processional of dancers that led Diana up the mountainside. Run, they whispered, for this is what happens if you let your feet take root. But wasn't that the life Diana's sisters had chosen? Bound to one spot, safe but locked out of time, preparing for a war that might never come. She rounded a bend and saw the crest of the peak before her, a small shrine near its apex, a Madonna surrounded by withered flowers and packages of sweets, small offerings. Diana somehow knew that there had always been shrines here, holy places where the gods' names were spoken, where prayers were offered beneath the black and limitless sky. She put on a spurt of speed, lengthened her stride, and gave a shout as she passed the shrine and reached the mountain's highest peak, raising her arms in victory. Jason padded up behind her, jogging the last few yards. His laugh was breathless as he bent double, hands on his knees.
Not nice to gloat, he panted.
Diana grinned. We should have made a wager. She gazed out over the valley to the peaks of the Taygetus far in the distance, a world painted in black and silver, the sky a dark vault of stars. It seemed to go on and on, unbounded by seas or barriers, a world that might take 100 human lifetimes to explore. But when they reached the spring, she would have to leave all of these horizons behind.
Well, I guess I'm no Agathon, Jason said. I barely kept up with you.
She gave him a grudging nod. You kept up fine.
Did I?
He asked. And somehow she knew that was not really the question he was asking. Starlight gilded the lines of his profile as he turned to her. Yes, she said. The sound caught on a breath. Jason leaned forward, and she felt her own weight shift as if snared by his gravity, by the shape of his lips, by the shift of muscle beneath his skin. His mouth met hers, warm and smooth, the first summer plum, ripe with promise. And hunger bloomed in her like an eager vine, its tendrils uncurling low in her stomach. He slid his hand into her hair, drawing her closer. But beneath his strength and speed, she could feel how very mortal he was, his life as fleeting as a kiss, a captured spark. He would not last. And so she let herself feel the fierce beat of his heart, the heat of his skin, the ferocity of a life that would shine for the barest moment, there and then gone. Chapter 22. Alia woke at dawn to birdsong, and a crescent moon visible on the horizon, a slender, perfect scythe. The reaping moon. Hecatombion had begun. We're almost there, she reminded herself. We just have to reach the spring before sunset. Either binding Theo and Nim during the night had done the trick, or the gods of battle had found some other group of people to harass because no one seemed to be screaming or trying to commit murder. Diana and Jason were already awake, the last of their food stores set out on a rock, as they debated the merits of which route to take to Therapny, and how they hoped to find the spring once they were there. They sat close together, their shoulders almost touching, the animosity that had hummed between them since that first meeting at the Good Night seemingly gone. Maybe it wasn't animosity, she considered as she rolled her head, trying to work the crick out of her neck. Ugh. If Jason was making moves on her friends, she didn't want to know about it, though he could definitely do worse. Alia left Nim still snoozing in the reclined driver's seat and went to wash her face and hands in the upper pool of the falls. She heard Theo before she saw him, the happy whistle of some song she didn't recognize floating around the bend in the path. Before she could turn and run, he was rounding the corner in his shiny, battered trousers and the stolen blue button-down that now seemed to be missing its sleeves. He was carrying the full water jug in front of him with both skinny arms, and stopped dead when he saw her. His crop of locks looked more awake than he did. Hey, he said. Well, this isn't going to be awkward at all. Hi, said Alia, making her best effort to sound normal. How'd you sleep?
Good, good. You?
Great, she said, continuing past him toward the falls. Easy. Now you just have to spend a few hours crammed in a car with him. No problem. She heard a thunk and his footsteps, and realized he'd set the water jug down and was jogging to catch up with her. Maybe she could just stick her head underwater and hold her breath until he went away. Listen, he began. Theo, whatever you're going to say is only going to make it worse. It's not a big deal. I was 13. I had a crush.
Because my eyes are golden as a sunset sea?
For a second, Alia was just confused, and then the memory came back to her with gut-clenching clarity. Your eyes are golden as a sunset sea. I could drown in them 1,000 times. That horrible letter.
Oh, God, Alia groaned. I was hoping you never read it.
Theo grinned.
I read it.
Well, it was a long time ago, she said with an awkward laugh. I wrote like 10 of those. One was to Zac Efron.
Oh.
He actually looked a little disappointed.
That's too bad. It was pretty much the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me.
Alia thought of the string of girls she'd seen with Theo the last few years.
Sure.
He ran his hand back and forth over his locks.
Do you even remember what you wrote?
Not exactly. Every time my brain tries to go back there, I cringe so hard I have to stop or risk an aneurysm. Theo looked down at his pointy-toed dress shoes. They were scuffed beyond repair, the houndstooth pattern on their sides nearly hidden by dust.
You said I was smart, and that if people didn't always get my jokes, maybe it was because they couldn't keep up.
I did? Well, she'd been right about that. Alia remembered how much she'd hated the way Michael picked on Theo, how kids at school had called him weird and goofy. As they'd gotten older, everyone had seemed to realize that Theo's taste in music and clothes and everything else wasn't so much weird as interesting. She'd watched girls start to fawn over him and had felt like a disgruntled hipster. I knew he was cool before you did.
You compared me to a pistol shrimp, he said.
Alia closed her eyes. Are you trying to get me to drown myself?
No, it was amazing.
You said the pistol shrimp was tiny, but it has this claw that can produce a bang.
Louder than a jet engine, said Alia.
Yeah, I remember. I was really into marine biology that year.
Right, said Theo eagerly. So it makes this bang that can shock big fish or whatever. But you said it survives by being noisy, not by trying to blend in.
How do you even remember all that?
Theo's grin went lopsided. He jammed his hands into his pockets and bounced once on his heels.
I kept it.
Really?
He shrugged. It was a good reminder when things weren't going great.
Alia folded her arms. If it meant so much to you, why didn't you say anything?
Theo rolled his eyes.
Because there was a lot of ridiculous kissy stuff, too, and you were 13 and my best friend's sister.
I thought you might pounce on me in the TV room and ask me to marry you. I mean, there's half a page dedicated to all the signs that we were soulmates. One of them was we both like ketchup.
Alia covered her head with her hands.
Stop. Lot of loopy stalker talk, some seriously convoluted metaphors.
Okay, that's enough. Go away and leave me to enjoy my humiliation in peace.
But that's what I'm saying. I'm sorry that note embarrasses you.
She lifted a brow.
Okay, I'm not that sorry because you're kind of cute when you're embarrassed, but that letter meant everything to me.
You told me you liked the way I wasn't like anyone else, and that was really what I needed to hear right then.
Then I guess you're welcome,
said Alia, unsure of what else to say. She supposed she could live with a little embarrassment,
but you still have to leave.
Why? Because I really need to go.
Right, to the spring.
No, she said, cheeks heating.
To go.
Theo gave her the thumbs up.
And I'm out.
He headed back down the path, but when he picked up the water jug, Alia said,
Hey, Theo?
Yeah?
The night of the party at the Met? How come you complimented everyone but me?
He grinned.
Because you in that gold dress turned my brain to mush.
She rolled her eyes.
Right.
He took a couple of steps, then paused.
Alia?
He called back.
What, Theo?
That night, at the party,
you looked like buried treasure.
Alia took her time getting back to the car, mostly because she couldn't shake the goofy grin from her face. And when she finally returned to the clearing, Diana was pacing, and Jason looked suitably grouchy. He opened the Fiat's door to usher them inside, and Alia was pretty sure that if he'd still had a watch, he would have tapped it impatiently. They squeezed into the same formation they had the previous day. Nim behind the wheel, Jason in the passenger seat, and the rest of them wedged into the back. Diana sandwiched between Alia and Theo like the really gorgeous filling in a pressed panini. Alia felt almost guilty for the room she had behind Nim and silently blessed her friend's short legs. They decided to keep to their plan to take the Langada Pass, and a few hours later they skirted the town of Kalamata, pausing only to get gas. After a negotiation that went considerably more smoothly with Diana doing the talking, before they joined up with the road heading east through the hills. It didn't take long to realize why locals didn't use this particular route. It clung to the cliff in a narrow ribbon, bracketed on one side by unforgiving gray rock, and on the other by a steep plunge into a tree-choked ravine. Alia tried to control her nausea as they snaked around another hairpin turn. The road shrank to a single lane in some sections, with no way to see who might be coming the opposite direction, or how fast. Even when there were two lanes, they were so cramped that whenever another car sped by, the Fiat shuddered. Alia told herself it was just because of the change in pressure between the two vehicles, but attaching Bernoulli's principle to the shaking didn't make her feel any less like they were one careless driver away from a crash that would smash them into the side of the mountain or send them sailing into nothingness. "This is an ancient road," said Diana, looking past Alia out the window. "Telemachus traveled it by chariot when he rode from Nestor's palace to meet Menelaus in Sparta."
"Menelaus, as in Helen's husband?" asked Alia.
"I bet Telemachus didn't get stuck behind a tour bus," growled Nim, laying on the horn.
"Hey," said Jason, "we're trying not to attract attention, remember?"
"Don't worry," said Nim, punctuating every word with a horn blast. "No one is paying attention to me." Eventually, the bus found a place to pull to the side, and Nim zoomed by as Alia clenched Diana's arm and squeezed her eyes shut.
"Nim," she gasped, "I realize we're fleeing for our lives, but that's not going to matter if we don't actually survive this drive."
"It's fine," said Nim, taking another turn with such enthusiasm everyone in the car slid hard to the left. They'd had to sacrifice the car's air conditioning to the climb up the hill, and now that they were free of the bus's exhaust fumes, Alia tilted her head out the open window and breathed deeply. The part of her brain that wasn't preoccupied with trying not to vomit could appreciate the beauty of this place, the dense clouds of pine, the jagged peaks and twisting spires of the pass. There were places where the rock hung low over the road like a wave frozen just before it broke. Others where the road narrowed and the car passed through a slender, rough-hewn furrow in the stone. Whoever had cut through the rock had left little room on either side. Alia felt like the Fiat was caught in some monster's gullet, and that at any minute the beast might clear its throat. They flew past a sign and Jason said, "That was the Caiaetus pit."
"The what now?" said Alia.
"It's where the Spartans dropped their enemies so no one would find them. It's supposed to be bottomless."
"Yeah, and their kids, too," said Theo, "if the babies weren't up to snuff."
"That's awful," said Alia. "It was a martial culture," Jason said. "They had different priorities." Theo flicked Jason's ear.
"So you're saying it was okay for them to dump anyone who wasn't a perfect physical specimen like yourself?"
"I'm just saying it was a different time." Nim shuddered. "A barbaric time."
"Is the world we live in so much better?" said Jason.
"Flush toilets," offered Nim. "Antibiotics," said Alia.
"Smartphones," said Theo.
"But that's what I mean," said Jason. "Antibiotics have created new strains of superbacteria. People are so dependent on their phones that they don't bother learning anything for themselves anymore." Alia leaned forward and swatted Jason's arm.
"I cannot believe you're talking smack about science."
Jason held up his hands defensively.
"I'm not. I'm just saying all those things that make our lives so convenient have a price. Think about the way technology has changed modern warfare. How much courage do you need to launch an airstrike from behind a computer screen?"
"It's true," said Diana. "You're efficient killers."
"Sure," said Alia, thinking of all the advances her parents had made at Corallus Labs, even the things they'd been working toward with Project Second Born.
"But we're also efficient healers."
"And that has a cost, too," said Jason. "Every generation is weaker than the last, unable to adapt and thrive without being propped up by vaccines, gene therapy."
Theo kicked the back of Jason's seat.
"Jesus, Jason, you're sounding more Spartan by the second."
"It's just biology," Jason said. "I'm not saying it's good or bad." Theo slumped back in his seat.
"Yeah, well, all I know is I would have been the first one over the cliff. The Spartans probably weren't big on scrawny nerd babies in a martial culture."
"It's a myth," said Diana. Alia wasn't sure what that meant anymore.
"You mean like warbringers and battle gods?"
"No, I mean one of the most famous Spartan poets was blind from birth. They had a king with a clubfoot. They knew there was more to being a warrior than strength. All that stuff about leaving babies to die was Athenian propaganda."
"Hey," said Nim, Do you know what the Spartans said when the Persians demanded they lay down their arms and surrender?
No, said Theo, but I bet it was followed by a lot of yelling and a slow-motion fight scene.
Molon Labe, said Jason.
Come and get them, murmured Diana.
Ha, said Theo.
Someone knows more than the know-it-all.
Nim hurtled them past the next turn.
Theo, I'm pretty sure we have time to detour to that bottomless pit.
Come and get them. Alia wondered if Diana thought they might be facing a battle today. Was she afraid? Or was she like a concert violinist looking forward to a chance to play?
Alia, said Theo, ignoring Nim, what's the first thing you want to do once you're purged of all your warbringerness?
Alia opened her mouth, then hesitated. In all the terror and desperation to get to the spring, she hadn't really thought about what might come after.
Do you think I'll feel different? She asked Diana.
I don't know, Diana said, but I think the world will.
Theo laughed. You mean we're all going to join hands and sing folk songs?
That sounds unpleasant, said Diana.
Come on, said Theo. Peace, love, the age of asparagus.
Aquarius, corrected Nim. Is this really what you think peace is? Diana said, clearly amused. It sounds like a bad one-act play.
No, 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 said Theo. It's definitely a musical. Oh, God, groaned Nim. When the moon is in the something-something, crooned Theo.
Nim gripped the steering wheel.
Theo, shut up. And Jupiter is wearing pants.
Theo, snarled Nim, shut up. There's something behind us. Alia craned her neck to see out the back window. There was a truck there, flashing its brights. Maybe he just wants to get by. But at that moment, the truck accelerated, its bumper kissing the back of the Fiat, sending the little car lurching forward as they all screamed. Alia looked back again, and through the window she saw the driver's hollow black eyes, his lips pulled back in a rictus grin, his monstrous face framed by a lion's helm. The truck flickered, and Alia saw the shape of a chariot drawn by four massive horses, their eyes red as blood, their huge hooves sparking against the asphalt. Fear flooded through her. She needed to get out of this car. Diana grabbed her hand, keeping it from the door handle.
Don't give in to the fear. It's Deimos, she said, keeping her voice low, steady, though Alia could see her pupils had dilated and a sheen of sweat had broken out on her brow.
God of terror, Phobos's twin. Nim, you have to slow down.
The driver laid on his horn, the sound too loud, filling Alia's ears. In it she heard the trumpets of war, the screams of the dying. The truck roared forward and banged against their bumper again. The car jolted, swung far into the left lane, nearly colliding with a car coming the other direction. Nim clutched the steering wheel, pulling them back into their lane, and hit the gas, trying to outpace the truck.
What do I do? She gasped, voice trembling.
In the rearview mirror, Alia could see the terror on her face, her knuckles white on the steering wheel.
Slow down, commanded Diana.
He's right on my butt, Nim yelled. Listen to Diana, he won't try to kill us, Jason said, his fists clenched, knuckles like white stars. Slow down, they don't want the Warbringer dead.
Do it, Nim, said Alia, though everything in her screamed to run as far and as fast from the monster behind them as they could. She made herself squeeze Nim's shoulder. Do it.
Nim huffed a low sob, flexed her fingers, and took her foot off the gas. The car slowed. Again the truck's horn blared, and Alia covered her ears. Over it all, she heard the roar of the engine, the thunder of hooves. The truck had moved into the opposite lane and was pulling alongside them.
He's going to run us into the cliff, cried Theo.
We need to stop, said Jason.
I can't, sobbed Nim. There are cars behind us.
Innocent drivers. What did they see? A little Fiat packed with tourists, slowing and speeding up, driving erratically? A truck trying to pass? Or something worse? If Nim stopped the car, the other drivers might have time to slow and stop safely, or those people might go careening off the cliff into the gorge. The sound of the chariot seemed to shake the little car,
The pounding of hooves was the detonation of mortars, the clatter of its wheels the ear-splitting percussion of gunfire. Theo laughed, and Alia saw Phobos beside Diana. He kicked at Jason's seat in ferocious glee as Diana put her arm out to restrain him. The Fiat shot forward.
Nim, slow down! Alia cried.
But Nim's only answer was a ragged cackle, her star-strewn hair a glittering tangle, as Eris shoved her foot down on the gas, racing the chariot. Deimos grinned and cracked his whip, a long black coil that gleamed like a slick-skinned adder in his hand. The chariot roared ahead, one car length, two, and cut into their lane. It screeched to a halt, and Alia saw the truck's trailer slide around so it was blocking the road. They were going to crash. She opened her mouth to scream. Jason grabbed the steering wheel and yanked it hard right. The Fiat jounced off the highway and onto a side road, its back wheels squealing against the blacktop as it skidded into a spin and careened off the pavement into the brush, branches crackling against the windshield. Alia realized Diana had braced her body around hers, then heard a loud bang. One of their tires had blown. The car slowed and finally rattled to a halt. The air went still, the silence strangely loud in Alia's ears, until one by one the sounds of the ordinary world seemed to return. Insects, the chirp of birds, the rhythm of her own frantic breathing. Jason had his arms straight out, hands flat against the dashboard, nostrils flaring as he inhaled, exhaled, eyes closed. Theo leaned his head against the back of Jason's seat, muttering, "Shit, shit, shit." Diana's face was pale, her blue eyes wide. She pushed the braids back from Alia's face. "Are you all right?" Alia managed to nod. Nim shoved open the driver's side door, stumbled two weaving steps, crumpled to her knees, and threw up. Alia batted at the door handle. She couldn't quite make her fingers work. Diana leaned forward and released the lock. Alia slid out after Nim, her legs rubbery. For a moment the world tilted and she thought she might faint. Then she was next to Nim, holding her tight as they both shook. She heard the car doors open and made herself take a proper look around. They were in a shallow gully pocked with olive trees. It had been sheer luck that they hadn't slammed into one of them and wrecked the car completely.
"So they weren't trying to kill us, huh?" said Theo, leaning against the side of the Fiat.
"They stopped the truck there for a reason," Diana said. She dug into the car's trunk and brought the water jug over to Nim, crouching down to offer it to her.
"Drink," she said gently.
Jason paced in tight circles. His eyes were a little wild. They wanted to slow us down. They knew the side road was here. They drove us off the highway on purpose.
"The chariot," Alia said, voice dazed. "I saw a chariot when we took off from the Great Lawn. I think it was one of them. I think he was helping us get away, driving the soldiers back, keeping me alive."
Nim took a sip of water, rinsed her mouth, spat in the dirt, then took another gulp and wiped the moisture from her lips.
"Is there a spare?"
"Nim," said Alia. There was no way Nim was ready to get back on the road.
"Is there a spare?"
Nim repeated, her gaze fierce.
"Yeah," said Theo, looking in the trunk. "There is."
"Then get to it," she said, waving at Diana and Jason. "One of you human jacks should be able to get the tire changed fast enough." Diana rested her hand on Nim's shoulder.
"Nim, are you sure you can do this? You've already proven your strength."
Nim shook her head. "Alia and I have spent half our lives being bullied. If those asshats think they can scare us into not fighting back, they're in for an education." Nim held up her right pinky, and Alia locked her own finger into it. Alia raised her left hand, and after a moment of confusion, Diana hooked her pinky with Alia's, then offered her other pinky to Nim.
"Are you guys forming a coven?"
called Theo, the spare slung over his bony shoulder.
"Bubble, bubble," said Nim with a determined grin.
Alia squeezed her pinkies and felt Nim and Diana squeeze back. They answered together, "Make some trouble."
Chapter 23. Instead of returning to the pass, they took the back roads.
Whether it was the scare with Deimos and his kin, or the fact that they had only 3 proper tires, Diana wasn't sorry Nim had tempered her exuberant driving style, and they progressed at a more reasonable pace. The Fiat had been badly banged up, its back bumper dented and its cheerful tangerine paint scratched along both sides, but its engine still hummed and it soldiered on. It seemed as if the Fiat and Nim were kindred spirits, tiny and indefatigable. Human courage was different from Amazon bravery. She saw that now. For all the suspicion and derision she'd heard from her mother and her sisters about the mortal world, Diana couldn't help but admire the people with whom she traveled. Their lives were violent, precarious, fragile, but they fought for them anyway, and held to the hope that their brief stay on this earth might count for something. That faith was worth preserving. The road they took away from the gorge was gentler, leading down into the vast green valley watered by the Eurotas River and bordered by the peaks of the Parnon Mountains beyond. It felt like a modern road, its wide lanes and mild curves leading them back to signs of civilization. The passing scenery made a strange dissonance, boxy houses with television aerials on their roofs, and shiny cars in their driveways nudged right up against tumbling stone ruins, or the crenellated walls of some ancient monastery. It was neither city nor country, but eventually they passed through a small town, the patios of the little hotels on its main square pocked with fat palms. Clouds of orange trees hung over whitewashed walls, and the air was sweet with the smell of their fruit. Then they were moving on, speeding through flat groves of olive trees bordered by metal fences, past a church capped in terracotta tiles and built of stone that glowed gold like the terraces of the mascara, until the road was dappled by the shade of plane trees and quivering fronds of fern. The countryside became suburbs, and those gave way to a modern town, wide boulevards bracketed by apartment buildings, offices, open-air cafes set with plastic umbrellas, metal street lamps marching steadily toward the town center.
"God, it feels so ordinary here," said Nim.
It was all still too new to Diana to feel ordinary, but they were surrounded by traffic, people. It felt safe somehow, as if the modern world might beat back the terror of the old gods. Too soon they were jogging north and crossing the Eurotas. As they passed over the river, Alia murmured, "We're close, aren't we?" "Only a few miles left," said Jason. He tapped a nervous rhythm on his thigh, every muscle in his body taut with worry. It was hard for Diana to believe he was the same boy who had run with her, laughing beneath the stars, who had kissed her on a mountain peak. She shook the thought from her head.
"Does it feel different to you here?" she asked Alia.
The landscape had changed subtly once again, grown more lush. They passed gated quarries, and here the olive trees' twisting gray trunks emerged from soft green grass. Even the color of the rock had changed from gray to a rich red. Alia let her hand float outside of the window, riding the currents.
"It feels familiar."
Clouds scudded across the sky, and the air blew cool against Diana's skin as the road began to climb through the low hills.
"No cars," said Theo. "No tour buses. I guess we'll have the tomb to ourselves."
"They forgot her," said Alia.
"Everyone remembers Helen of Troy, but she was from Sparta. This was her home. The queen who lived and died here, they forgot." Nim's pace had slowed to a crawl as she wended around the road's wide, lazy curves.
"Does it seem, I don't know, too quiet to anyone?"
Alia shivered and rubbed her arms.
"You mean like something's going to go horribly wrong?"
"You know what they say," said Theo. "Don't shoot a gift horse in the mouth."
"I'm pretty sure that's not what they say," said Nim.
Alia took a deep breath.
"Everybody just stay relaxed."
Jason shifted uneasily in the passenger seat, a muscle ticking in his jaw. Diana knew they were all thinking the same thing. After the horrors of the past, there should have been something worse waiting for them as they neared the spring, and yet there was no sign of trouble. The road climbed steadily, surrounded on all sides by rocky pasture, more olive trees, the stark trunks of telephone poles. They passed through a small town that seemed to appear up against the hills for no reason, and a large cemetery blooming around a church like a crop of white crosses. As it turned out, the sign for the tomb was so small they had to double back twice before they found it. A dented metal rectangle tilting woozily on its metal pole, nearly hidden by yellow wildflowers. The words were written in Greek and English. Menelaon, sanctuary of Menelaus and Helen.
At least she made it onto the sign, muttered Alia.
There was nowhere to hide the Fiat, so they had to park it up against the dirt shoulder of the road.
It feels weird to just leave her out here in the open, said Alia.
It's a girl, said Theo.
Sure, isn't it obvious?
This feels too easy, Diana murmured to Jason as they fell in step behind the others.
It's possible we lost whoever attacked us on the jet, he replied, eyes scanning the surroundings. They had no way of knowing we were headed to some obscure tomb.
Even so, where's Eris? Where are the twins? They don't need satellites to track us.
They could still make a showing, he said.
They might. But another voice spoke inside Diana. What if it had all been a ruse? The oracle had said the spring at Therapany, but what if Diana had somehow misunderstood? Maybe there was some other place sacred to Helen. Maybe Eris and her horrible nephews had just been a distraction, driving them on, making sure they were focused on the wrong target as the hours until Hecatombion winnowed away.
Diana, said Jason, startling her from her thoughts.
His hand brushed the back of hers, and she remembered how it had felt to kiss him beneath the night sky.
When this is over, will you go home?
Yes, she said without thinking. Ah. He trained his eyes on the ground.
For good?
How could she explain the rules of the island? She supposed that after all of this, even if they succeeded, she might be exiled. But time passed differently on Themyscira. While Diana was tried and sentenced, years would pass in the mortal world. And even if she could somehow find her way back to her friends, could that ever temper the pain of losing her home? Of never seeing her mother or her sisters again?
I don't know, she said. I don't belong here, Jason.
But you could, he said, still not looking at her. In time.
Is this it? Said Theo from up ahead, standing near the top of the hill, hands on hips. The ruins were less dramatic than Diana had expected. She knew there had once been a vast settlement here, shrines and temples dedicated to Helen and her husband. But now all that remained were a few overgrown foundations surrounding an unimpressive pile of earth that looked like a cross between a burial mound and what might have once been a temple, its stone walls slowly being swallowed by wildflowers. Beyond it, the green bowl of the valley glowed golden, as if the sun had pooled between the mountain ranges, glinting off the banks of the Eurotas far below.
It doesn't look like much, said Nim. And where's the spring?
Maybe it's a metaphorical spring, said Theo.
Like the spring is inside all of us.
Why didn't I run you over when I had the chance?
Diana, said Alia. The sick sensation in Diana's gut worsened. The oracle just said the spring at Therapany. Could she have meant somewhere else?
Where?
Said Diana. There are no other monuments to Helen in Therapany.
Where Helen rests, the Warbringer may be purified.
She could feel her frustration rising. This is where Helen was laid to rest. It was her shrine first, before it belonged to Menelaus.
There's nothing here, said Jason.
Theo turned in a slow circle.
We came all this way for nothing?
Jason shook his head.
Alia, we have to get you out of here. You could still be in danger.
I'm not going anywhere. Her eyes met Diana's. I held up my end of the bargain. The sun will set soon.
No. They'd barely looked for the spring. They hadn't thought this through.
We still have time, said Diana. We'll find some other solution.
How much time do we have left? An hour and a half?
There is no other solution. I won't live knowing I could have stopped this.
Alia, Jason said sharply, I am not letting you kill yourself.
It isn't up to you, she said. Her voice was clear and strong and rang with conviction, the sound of steel against steel. This is between me and Diana. Sister in battle. It wasn't supposed to come to this. Diana had known in her heart they were meant to reach the spring together. What other lies had she told herself?
You can't be serious, said Nim desperately. What if this is all some kind of big mistake? For all we know, this Warbringer thing is just...
Nim, after everything you've seen, everything we've been through, you know this is real.
We're not going to kill you off as a precautionary measure, said Theo.
He gripped her shoulder, more serious and more frightened than Diana had ever seen him.
There has to be a way to fix this.
But Alia shrugged him off. She took a step closer to Diana, and Diana had to will herself not to move away from her. Your cause is mine. She'd sworn to become a murderer, stain her hands with innocent blood. She'd given her oath, but Diana had never truly believed she'd be forced to fulfill it. She could not. She would not. And yet how was she to turn away from the conviction in Alia's eyes? Alia had fought with everything she had to reach the spring, to reach the future Diana had promised might be hers.
Sister in battle,
Diana said, ashamed of the tears that roughened her voice.
I have failed you.
You haven't, said Alia, taking another step toward her. Not yet. Jason moved to block her path.
Enough. We never should have come here. You would be safe right now if...
No, Alia said, and Diana heard the anger in her voice. Your solution was to hide. Ours was to fight. Don't you dare blame us for trying. Diana, you gave me your word. Diana could feel the oath that bound her, as powerful as the lasso, as indestructible. She could not live with herself if she violated the vow she'd given. But how could she live knowing she'd taken Alia's life? She was immortal, and that would give her an eternity to endure this terrible shame.
Make your choice, daughter of Earth.
Eris. So she had come after all, to gloat. Diana looked to Nim, expecting a monster's face, but saw Nim's wide brown eyes, her mouth agape as she stared at a figure perched at the apex of the rocky ruins, black wings spread wide, the tips of her filthy feathers nearly touching the ground. Her hair flowed around her face in curling tendrils of darkness, and the gold smeared across her lips glinted in the sun.
Foolish girl, with your noble quest and your heart that yearns for glory. Can you do it? Cut her throat to keep us at bay?
Is that what I looked like?
Nim asked in disgust. A wind rose, billowing up from the earth around them, and the sound of hoofbeats filled the air. The dust collected in the shape of two chariots, cutting a path around them, the hooves of their horses seeming to fly over the ground.
I don't know, said Theo, backing up so they stood clumped together at the base of the tomb. I look pretty cool.
Phobos smiled from his chariot, his hideous pointed teeth emerging.
Or not.
Had the battle gods grown stronger this close to sunset? Was that why they didn't need to possess Nim and Theo any longer? Or had that just been a game to them?
You have laid a feast before us, shouted Phobos,
his voice rising shrill above the clatter of wheels and hooves.
And, oh, young warrior, cried Deimos in exultation, the crack of his whip like a bomb blast. We will eat our fill.
Eris rose in the sky, beating her shield with her sword, the clamor unbearable. Diana covered her ears with her hands, but she couldn't block out the sound of her regret. She'd gotten it wrong, all of it.
The reaping moon has come. In an hour, the sun sets and darkness rises, yet here you languish,
Eris cackled. She rose higher, her vast wings blotting out the sun, casting them in shadow.
What will you tell your sisters, your mother? And you, Warbringer,
Deimos mocked as his chariot raced faster.
What will you tell your mother in the afterlife?
Phobos bellowed laughter.
She will wear a veil in the underworld and hide her face for the shame you've brought her, Haptandra, the cursed.
Diana and the others clustered in a frightened circle, back to back, shoulder to shoulder, as the chariot circled, their steeds sending up clumps of earth, the horses' lips pulled back as they snapped at their golden bits, their muzzles trailing blood-flecked foam. The shields, the hooves, the whip, the rumble of the wheels, the sound was overwhelming, filling Diana's skull, shaking her teeth.
"I can't think," Theo shouted. "They're too loud."
"But why?" yelled Alia. "This is different from last time. Why are they making so much noise?"
Jason shook his head, hands clamped to his ears. "They've won, and they know it."
He was right. Alia and the others were grasping at false hope. It was the way of mortals. And yet, if Diana had been wrong all along, why interfere at all? For the fun of it? On Themyscira, she'd grown used to the extraordinary, to the knowledge that the gods made demands, that their will dictated the rules of the island. But nothing in the mortal world was as it had been on Themyscira, and the gods of the battlefield were not the goddesses of her home. They hungered for blood and sorrow. They required it and needed mortals to provide it. So why exactly were they here? Had they simply come to enjoy her suffering in this last hour? Her suffering, but not her terror. She was scared, frustrated, furious with herself. Yet that gibbering, mindless horror wasn't flooding through her. Why wouldn't the battle gods want them terrified, unless they didn't want the group to run? What if they simply wanted them to stay here, stay still, paralyzed and deafened? What if Alia was right? What if they'd come with a purpose? What if all this din was to drown something out? She remembered the way Phobos had hissed at the touch of her lasso. Could its touch kill a god? It didn't have to. She just needed to drive them back. She just needed to buy some respite from that clamor. Diana gritted her teeth and removed her hands from her ears, the noise rising to a jaw-shaking roar. She unhooked the lasso and swung it over her head, a steady rhythm matching it to the beat of her heart. It felt comforting in her hands, and yet so slight. Was this a weapon with which to face the gods? She let it swing farther and farther in a widening loop, then unleashed it with a snap. It glowed golden in her hands, lashing out like a tongue of yellow flame at the wheels of Phobos's chariot, and sending him veering off course. Snap! It snatched at Deimos's helmet, like a hungry serpent, forcing him to shake his reins and break his horse's stride. The sounds of their shields and chariots faded. Maybe it was just the weapon she needed. Diana swung the rope wider and wider, the lasso seeming to lengthen impossibly in her hands, the gust of its momentum forcing Eris back, her wings flapping grotesquely as she let fly a hideous shriek, and sunlight burst over them once more.
"Diana!"
shouted Alia. Her face was alight, her braids made a halo around her head, as if borne aloft by invisible current. She was bracketed by two figures of light. They were Nim and Theo, but Diana knew then they were also the Dioscuroi, Helen's twin brothers and guardians, legendary warriors.
"Diana," said Alia. "I hear it."
"Hear what?" shouted Jason, his face grim and disbelieving.
"I don't hear anything."
"Listen," urged Alia. He tugged on her arm.
"Enough, Alia, we have to get out of here now."
Alia shook her head. She smiled, and the air around her seemed to shimmer. "They're singing."
Chapter 24. The song was faint, so quiet that at first Alia felt sure she was imagining it. She dismissed it, her mind still reeling from the sight of Eris wheeling in the sky above them, of Diana keeping Phobos and Deimos at bay, the lasso a bolt of lightning in her hands. Then there it was, a ringing in her ears, the wind in the trees, no, something more, a melody. One voice became two, 10, 20. She didn't understand the words, but she knew they were guiding her.
"What did the oracle say, Diana?" Diana glanced at her, confused.
the lasso still whirling in her hands. I told you. No, what were her exact words? Where Helen rests, the Warbringer may be purified.